And joining us now live in our studio to continue the conversation, not just about the air, but the weather overall as we enter 2018, we have with us in our studio Sean Boyd, local meteorologist and professor at Fresno State. Sean, welcome.
Welcome. Good to be here.
Sean, before we get into this most recent precipitation event that's still underway, which we are so happy to see a very dry end of 2017, I want to go back to this air quality thing and that stretch that we had for a couple of weeks that ended last year and began this year.
Right.
From a meteorological perspective, how unique was that stretch that we had?
It was extreme. I concur with the UC Davis researcher who said, rightfully, scientifically so, that when the Thomas Fire was going on and the other fires are going on in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties, most of that smoke was blown offshore by winds coming out of the east, which are Santa Ana winds. Between about December 24th and about January 4th, when we had persistent high pressure aloft and a very strong temperature inversion over the valley, there was very little wind on the surface or primarily aloft to transport smoke from those fires to the San Joaquin Valley. It would have had to been a pretty brisk southerly wind aloft to bring that smoke here, and that was not happening at the time. So the usual culprits were the culprits, I believe, which were agricultural pollution vehicles and primarily simply people burning wood when they're not supposed to burn wood in their fireplaces. Look, people have been burning wood ever since we were able to control fire, but the bottom line is that in a developed nation, in most places in the U.S., burning wood for heat and for cooking is an ancient practice. And I fail to understand why it is that people don't care about their neighbors. I mean, I talk to, I'm not naming names, I communicate with a former Fresno Bee reporter who talked to one of his neighbors who was burning wood on a no-burn day, and the neighbor basically said, look, the government's taken so much away from us, they're not taking that away from me. I'm putting a log in my fireplace. And unfortunately, this is a problem, you know. I'm very thankful for the rain for a number of reasons, including but not limited to cleaning the air up finally so we can breathe again for a few days.
And again, a confluence of factors there coming together and making a very dangerous situation for Valley residents with the air quality. Thankfully, that is behind us right now, at least for the present. Let's talk about what's happening right now in the Valley. And this is really the first big storm of this winter that we have seen, certainly in the central San Joaquin Valley. The South Valley just got it overnight, 4 a.m. to 7 a.m., had a big downpour there in Kern County.
Yes.
So put in this storm into context so far for us, Sean.
All right, sure will. So I had to get the stats revised from when I did my research about 36 hours ago initially because things have changed. It's a moving target. So if we go to 4 o'clock this morning, that's kind of the cutoff, Fresno had about 4/10 of an inch of rain for the storm, which brings us to about 9/10 for the water year to date. That's from October 1st to the present.
That's rather dismal sounding.
Yeah, which is only 22% of average for the water year to date. Up till 4 a.m., Bakersfield only had, 6/100 for the storm. At 13/100 for the entire rainfall or water year so far since October 1, normally it's 2.25. So they were at 5% of average for the water year as of 4 a.m. Now, that's changed in the last few hours because the cold front went through Kern County and Meadowsfield did report heavy rain. Similarly, for the season to date, 4 a.m., excuse me, I'm going to revise my statement. For the water year to date since October 1st, Hanford is only at 28% of average. Madera is only at 20% of average. Now, Merced is at 39% of average. And you're wondering, well, gee, why has Merced got this bump up? That's because they reaped the benefits of storms that hit the northern third of the state in November, which were quite wet. They were just on the southern edge of that. So those are the stats to date with respect to the water year to date from October 1st to the present. You know, the rain is welcome. In California, anytime it rains, it snows. It's a gift. But one of the problems with the West, and one of the really most interesting books I've read about this topic lately, is actually a book called The West Without Water, which I'm going to pull out of my case so that I can read the author's names. The West Without Water by B. Lynn Ingram and Francis Molliman Rome, I think they're both UC Berkeley scientists, is that when we have rain and snow in the West in our wet season, that rain and snow primarily comes due to a few to several major events. If we don't get those major events during the time we're supposed to get them, then the D word starts to creep back into our vocabulary. So, yes, this is the first major storm for Central and Southern California for the 2017-2018 water year.
So speaking of the D word, people have been mentioning that for the last couple of months as we saw storms pass us by and pass us by, that being drought. Where do we stand right now in our storage for this area, because water storage being such a big concern in our reservoirs?
It's a very good question. Now, these stats are as of Sunday. And no doubt the stats have come up a little bit since the storm began. It takes a little while. There's some lag time between when the precipitation falls on the watersheds and goes into the reservoirs, of course. But, for instance, Pine Flat right now is at 50% of capacity, but at 119% based on history for this date. So that clearly shows carryover from our excessively wet year, the 2016-2017 winter. Don Pedro is at 81% of capacity. That's 122% of average for history to date. And let's see, I've got Millerton, 68% of capacity now, but it's 125% of historic storage for this date. So you can see there's carryover on surface water, which, of course, by any measure is a good thing.
How much of that is due to management decisions versus just the sheer amount that was in the system from last year?
Well, it's a combination of both. I couldn't answer or address management decisions. I'm sure that some of the most nervous people in California are the people who manage those dams. I wouldn't want to be one of them. They probably have one of the most high-pressure jobs you can get anywhere in California. Now, the anomaly is Oroville, by the way, which is only at 35% capacity and 56% of historic storage to date. And that primarily is because of the repair on the spillway that's still going on.
And that is significant, though, because Oroville being the largest reservoir in the State Water Project, which supplies Kern County and Southern California with much-needed water through that
system. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So before we get into the long-term outlook, I want to go back a little bit, back to when it was very dry at the end of last year, November, December, in this part of California.
We spoke a week and 6 days ago today on this same show.
Exactly. And things did not look good at that point.
But they were just beginning to change.
Exactly. We had this return earlier, a few weeks ago, of the ridiculously resilient ridge, as some people call it, this block of high pressure that was out there. Funneling storms away from us and then also bringing some of that cold weather to the East Coast and the Mid-Atlantic states and things like that. We have seen that in recent years before. In fact, 2017 ended much like a few years ago. I think it was 2013, one of those drought years. Can you compare what we were seeing there with maybe those years in the drought?
Well, the pattern in late November through all of December was strikingly reminiscent of the 2013-2014 winter, the 2014-2015 winter, when, in fact, the triple R, and I believe the researchers that were at Stanford coined this term, a guy named Swain and a guy named Diffenbach, the ridiculously resilient ridge. It was there, perhaps not as strong as it was during those winters, but it had the capability of weakening approaching storms or splitting the energy from storms, driving some of the energy north into British Columbia, Washington State, some of the energy south where it would dissipate. And this is actually quite quite analogous to the La Nina pattern, which we see. And that's, of course, the next question you're probably going to ask me is, what's the status of La Nina? Well,
you read my mind, Sean.
Yeah. Well, to refresh everybody's memory, neither El Nino nor La Nina are storms. They are not storms. It's part of a bigger seesaw pattern of sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, stretching from Peru to Indonesia, called ENSO, El Nino Southern Oscillation. Normally, the water off the coast of Peru is cold, kind of like it is here in California. If that water gets much colder than average, which it is now, we are in then a La Nina phase. And that is the best guess of the Climate Prediction Center now, that we are in a La Nina phase, and that the predictions are we'll stay in a La Nina phase through northern hemispheric winter and into early northern hemispheric spring. Typically, that means that Central and Southern California remain on the dry side as far as our precipitation accumulation in a typical winter under these conditions. That's not always the case. For instance, doing a little research, and I attribute this to some extent to Jan Knoll of Golden Gate Weather Services, it's interesting to note that even though historically La Nina winters mean drier than average conditions for Central and Southern California, there were three La Ninas in the past 20 years which were above average, including 2005-2006, 2010-2011, which was the seventh wettest season in Fresno history, and 2016-2017, which was the eighth wettest season in Fresno history. So it doesn't always go to show that just because there's a La Nina that it is going to be dry. But statistically speaking, in the last 70 years, that has been the case.
Now, does this go back to what you were talking about earlier with the water in the West, or the West without water, where the fact that so much of our precipitation comes from just a handful of events?
Yes.
It's really just the luck of the draw if you happen to wind up in the right path?
Yes, that's right.
And the Pineapple Express kind of phenomenon?
Yeah, exactly. Atmospheric rivers, as they're called. And that's a term that is used, you know, quite a lot. Atmospheric river is essentially defined as a highly, a greater than average amount of water vapor in the upper atmosphere, which targets a particular area for at least 24 hours. And so there are some that are saying our current system or series of systems is part of an atmospheric river. But what Ingram and Malibu Rome discussed in their book is the paleoclimatological evidence, meaning looking at the sediments in old lakes in the West. And when they say the West, they're basically mean from the Rockies westward to the Pacific, that strongly suggests that there have been periods of droughts called mega droughts, which have lasted for decades in parts of the West, long before there were tens of millions of people living the way they live. We're talking about, indigenous societies that, basically lived off the land and so on. And they were adversely affected. They talk about the people in Chaco Canyon who may have their civilization may have been destroyed because of a mega drought of that sort. So we've got all these people now, and everybody's got their straw into sources like the Delta or the Colorado River. And you have to ask these serious questions about, in the very long term, how sustainable is this?
Now, going back to this idea of the ridiculously resilient ridge, there's some discussion, and reading Daniel Swain, who's the Weather West a meteorologist, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who's now at UCLA and coined that term, he did not go so far as to say this is a result of climate change, but he did raise the question as to, is there a possible connection, and is there some more research that we need to do to try to determine what's going on up in the Arctic and with this ridiculously resilient ridge of high pressure. What have you read on that particular issue? Is there any link from what you know?
It is difficult, if not impossible, to take one event and link it to climate change. Swain's right about that. But what climate change does do is it exacerbates existing patterns and amplifies them and makes them more extreme. The former head of NASA, I believe, Hansen is his last name. I can't remember his first name off the top of my head. But he looks at it this way. If you take extremes in weather events around the world and compare the number of extremes and the intensity of those extremes to the 1951 to 1980 averages for extreme weather, we're finding that the number of extremes and the extremity of those extremes has increased by about 3 standard deviations to the right of the top of that bell curve, which are the 1951 to 1980 averages for extremes. So while you cannot say, oh, Harvey was because of climate change, oh, Irma was because of climate change, or oh, our drought was because of climate change, when you add it up in the aggregate, human-induced climate change, because of the release of greenhouse gases, can exacerbate existing patterns and make them more extreme. That much we can say with confidence.
So as we're running out of time here, I want to get to the big question moving ahead of what is moving ahead. Obviously, it's a cone of probability with all the different models that are out there, and it changes very quickly as those models are run every day or less than that.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing right now in the immediate future, and then maybe if you go as far as you want into the longer-term opportunities for precip here in the Valley?
Well, I guess this is kind of where human geography has a nexus with physical geography, because on the human side of things, I suppose we should expect the worst but hope for the best. If the combination of this being a weak to moderate La Nina, plus adding into it something we don't have time to talk about, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is also in a slight negative phase, meaning that waters are colder than average, those two in combination typically spell dry conditions during the wet season for Central and Southern California. That would be the best projection going forward for the next 3 months. But, you know, anything can happen. Look what happened this time last year when things turned around very quickly and with tremendous results. And, of course, the bad side of this is we've had some tremendous fires, the Thomas Fire being the largest fire in modern California history. And now we have debris flows between Santa Barbara and Ventura, which have closed that highway. So there are consequences. Nonetheless, we have to take the bad with the good, because California needs every drop from the sky it can get.
And then the short term coming up here over the next few days, should we expect any more storms, or are we going to be drying out?
Computer models strongly suggest there seems to be unanimity right now that after this storm passes through here in the next 24 to 30 hours, that we'll go back to a ridge of high pressure, which will be rather stable, meaning not moving very much. And that will mean mountains will start to warm up and the valley will be prone to night and morning fog now that we've had some soil moisture and probably no major storms for at least a week. There is a hint of something perhaps in about a week and a half. We'll just have to wait and see.
We will see. And the return of that sometimes elusive valley fog.
Yes.
Some people will await that eagerly, but I know others will be dreading that occurrence.
I would say watch for that on Thursday morning especially.
All right. Sean Boyd, meteorologist and geography professor at Fresno State, joining us today talking about the weather here on Valley Edition. Sean, thank you so much.
You're welcome.